Welcome to New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within the different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here with Kyle Cousins. Kyle is the Area Director of Mission Increase Foundation, where he works with nonprofits, teaching, coaching, and consulting on fundraising. I'm assuming you do more too, but we first met, I don't know if you even remember this, on a basketball court maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Milky Madness?
Yeah, a little Milky Madness, yeah. What I love about you, Kyle, is you are a deep thinker and you care very much about making a difference. So I'm glad to have you on and want people to hear some of your stories and how you answer some of these things.
Yeah, honored to be here today, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Give us a little background on yourself. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? A little bit of your career.
Yeah, I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, not far from where you attended college at Wheaton. When I was 15, my family moved to West Michigan. So I spent about 10 years there, high school and college, attended a small liberal arts school there in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
You played a little sports there?
Played baseball in college. Okay. Yep. So, but I'm quick to tell people I played it. It was a Division III school. So lest someone think that I'm like some outstanding athlete.
Well, I saw you on the court. You clearly are an athlete.
You're very kind. And then when I was 25, moved down to Orlando for a job. So that's kind of my upbringing in a nutshell.
How did that coincide with your parents being in Orlando?
My dad, for the bulk of my life, from kind of age 6 to 26, my dad was in the consulting space in ministry. He had started and launched a very successful church, large church in the Chicago suburbs, before I was born. And then when I was young, left that role to kind of start his own consulting deal. And that plays quite a bit into my story, which I'm sure we'll get into. And then when I was 26, moved down to Florida and called him because he at the time consulted with churches and ministries, organizations all over the world. And so when I got the job in Orlando, I called him up and said, "Hey, you got any churches in Orlando?" Mm-hmm. And he said, "Yeah, in fact, I do. You ought to plug in." And so he kind of told me where to go. And then over time, his role with that church, just as the Lord would have it, continued to grow, such that fast forward a number of years, he was invited to be on staff and eventually invited to be the interim senior pastor. And now he is the senior pastor.
Okay.
And so I laugh because I moved to somewhat get some space from family and parents. And now we live about 20 minutes apart.
You've actually done some pretty unique stuff. Can you give us a little smattering of that?
Sure. The way I explain it is I have two siblings who, kind of at the age of 10 or 12, knew what they wanted to be when they grew up, like a lot of kids do, but they're now doing it. My sister wanted to be a doctor. She's now a doctor. My brother, kind of his dream was to be a professional athlete. He's now doing that. I was more the kid that just kind of, they woke up in the morning with goals and lists of where they wanted to be 10 years from now. I woke up in the morning wondering what's for breakfast and who's hanging out this weekend.
But it's so funny. My perception of you is that you're way more driven and focused than that.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting observation because I've had a lot of other people say that to me as I've gotten older.
Yeah.
I think our family is so type A and so intense that by comparison, like when I leave the home, I realize how type A I actually am.
Okay.
But by comparison, I was always sort of the black sheep. I was the laid back one, the most chill of the cousins clan, will, which is saying something. So that was very much my story is high school, college. Always felt kind of behind, not prepared, I was the kid doing college applications the last semester, never really had a clear direction. And I would say that as I got older, that even became a point of frustration, you know, even regret in some areas. Man, I wish I would have done this mm-hmm. better, right? Hindsight is 20/20. And eventually even kind of frustration with the Lord and my relationship with him and just feeling like tried to honor you, I've tried to live life, you know, in obedience, and yet you kind of have quote unquote led me on this path that just feels all over the place and has little focus, little direction to it. And so what I call sort of the 10-year journey from 22 to 32 was very much bouncing around to some really unique, cool opportunities, but all over the map, literally and figuratively.
I'm assuming at 32-ish, let's give or take, got some clarity.
Got some clarity, yeah. And so we're kind of where we're at today. I've been in the Mission Increase role for going on 3 years now. Probably in the first job I've ever had where I'm closer in line with what I believe my gifts and abilities are.
Okay.
Now, again, looking back, right, and I think a lot of us say this, God doesn't waste, he never wastes an opportunity. I believe that. And so I look back over those 10 years and I could give you a list of the things I did. I've never actually tallied up how many jobs I had, but worked, did sports psychology at the NBA level, worked for Disney in a number of different roles, was a personal trainer, lived overseas to finish grad school, finished seminary, got a seminary education at the same time. Just a very eclectic, you know, kind of a smattering of experiences. But I would tell you that the theme or the thread through all of that was not necessarily getting to use what I felt like were the maximum gifts or abilities I had, but more so experiences that God allowed to shape me. And I look back now and I see, as random as those were, each one contributed to a unique either skill set or now more of a honed craft that I have today, which is kind of cool looking back and seeing how the pieces all fit together.
For our listeners, they don't know this, but you are a relatively new parent.
Correct.
And how's that going?
Yeah, it's going really well. Yeah, we've got a little 8-month-old daughter, Josephine Ruth. Josie or JoJo, depending on the situation. And she's just a total sweetheart, like really happy baby. She's sick right now, unfortunately. So I'm not feeling well, but that's been just obviously such a gift. A lot of fun.
And then how long ago did you get married?
We got married, I should know that faster, right? February of 2019.
Okay.
So we're coming up on 3 years.
Okay. So married for 3 years, you have a daughter, you're basically in a career now that seems like you're settled in. That's 3 years. A lot has changed. How would you best describe yourself in the context of where you are at in your life journey?
No, it's a great question. I think just bouncing off of what I just shared, I had to process a lot of, I think, emotions, frustrations, maybe with looking, right? We all compare.
Yep.
And in my case, comparing to my siblings who I love and I'm really close with, but seeing kind of the direct focus that their professional lives had and being jealous of that in a lot of ways. Not jealous of them necessarily, but sure, wanting what they, if I'm being real, wanting what they had. And so I think in hindsight, having to learn to appreciate the last 10 years and say that, okay, I'm not a failure because of that. I'm not less than. In fact, God has used, and I think will continue to use those experiences to shape who I am today. And who knows what I'll be doing when I'm 40, 45. So I try to choose to have the positive outlook on that.
Uh-huh.
Really the role I'm in today, like I said, first role that I feel like I'm finally more in line with a calling, if you will, or what I've been made to do. So my journey has really been figuring that out. I would call the 10-year journey one of patience, one of just a lot of learning, a lot of being shaped. And to give some specifics to that, I think what I had to find out, because I did roles in, you know, marketing, business development, sales, all kinds of things, and realizing ultimately I want my work not just to be with people. I was in jobs where I worked with people, but my work was a thing.
Okay.
I was selling a thing, or I was selling a product or an idea, and realizing I really actually want my work to be people.
Okay.
I want my time and energy spent on helping grow people, nurturing people, their hearts and minds. And that clarity for me took, sadly, it took about 10 years to be stronger on that point. And at Mission Increase, now I get to do that. My work is, it's not a thing. I share ideas and concepts, but my work is people. And I'm thankful that I get to do that now. So that's really my journey, was figuring out that. And there's obviously a lot more pieces to it, but moving more in a direction of getting to teach, coach, lead people and help them kind of live into who they are.
Yeah. And I remember having some discussions, whatever it was, 3 or 4 years ago, as you were, well, I guess before you took this role, just trying to wrestle through what you should do and what your giftedness is. Let me go back to one thing and then we'll move forward, because I appreciate your honesty. Your family, is yourself included, are top performers. Any insight on that? I mean, your brother's an NFL quarterback. How do you deal with that?
Yeah.
I mean, human nature.
I'm laughing because I get linked in with them. And I say, well, if you looked at the story, maybe not. That's a great question. And I think it's very much a reality, has been a reality of my life, where, again, I think I can genuinely say I've never been truly jealous of Kirk or envious of him, because I am so happy for him. And he's been incredibly gracious in his journey to invite me along. He knows that my dream would have been to be a professional athlete, to get to pitch, to play football. And so he's been amazing to invite me in, me and all of our close friends from high school, to let us be a part of that, of his journey, which has been super fun. Any frustration has really been inward focused and just wishing, again, either getting frustrated with the Lord for not, you know, quote unquote, leading me in a different direction, or to be honest, self-contempt would probably be the best word, disappointment in myself, regret for missing opportunities, not working harder when I was younger. My dad, because you asked about him, love and respect my dad, which in many ways is rare for a ministry kid or for a pastor's kid, sadly. But I love and respect my dad. Again, the downside was just as I got older, really realizing or feeling that my brother and my dad are kind of cut from the same cloth. They speak the same language. They're different in some ways, but they kind of get each other, if you will. And I think growing up, I was much more artistic. I was the singer, you know, I like to dance. I was a little more creative, a little more goofy, silly. And I don't know that my dad always knew what to do with that. and he said that to me in subsequent years, almost apologizing, just saying, I think I would have tried to nurture this a little better or push you in this direction. But he was the son of a bricklayer, grew up in the city of Chicago. He knew sports, right? We grew up Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, Cubs, and we lived, ate and breathed sports. And that's a big part of my life too. I like to think of myself still as an athlete and all that, but there's ways that those uniquenesses about me maybe could have been nurtured differently. And I had to figure that out as I got older, not be ashamed of it, and also find ways to mature in it, and then be also grateful for who my dad and my brother and my whole family, like who they are and what's unique about each of us.
One last question on that part of your life. What would you say, or what do you think, when we're in the age of social media, and whether it's your dad, whether it's your brother, I'm sure you can find at any given time crap about them. How do you deal with that?
It's not easy. Probably 2 or 3 years into his college career, I mean, we learned quick. I remember I could tell you specific stories, won't for the sake of time today, but specific stories in college and the NFL that were kind of benchmark moments where we would go out places and you realize, like, oh, everybody knows who we are now. Or we'd go to this restaurant and everybody's looking at us because of Kirk. Or and then in the church space, when my dad did become the senior pastor at the church here in town, kind of that fishbowl feel. And walking in and, you know, I thought, I was 26, 27, and thinking, I see why this messes up like 12 and 13 year old kids.
Yeah.
Because it feels like everybody knows you and you don't necessarily know everybody else, and they're watching your every move. But to your question on the social media thing, I think it's been a learning experience of learning how to filter what's true and what's not. Mm-hmm. And learning how, you know, Kirk, for example, he has nothing on his phone. He has no access to Twitter, Instagram, any of that. So if there's anything he needs to be active on, it's on his wife's phone, and she does a lot of that. And then the nice thing is at this point in his career, he's got a team, right? He's kind of operating from a marketing standpoint, any of his posts. So he knew early on that there's just no good to be had from scrolling Twitter and seeing what people have to say. And I think I'm able to kind of live in the middle.
Yeah.
And because I like to stay updated and see.
I know your personality. You also like to be in that a little bit.
Well, and you know that, you know, I've got a little bit of fighter in me.
Yes, you do.
I can be an antagonist. So there is a part of me, and we won't turn this into a Vikings football podcast, but I could very easily. There is a part of me that wants to know the narrative and doesn't shy away from what people have said about Kirk and all that, because, again, because of our faith, we believe that God's writing a story with his life, like he is with all of ours. And that may or may not end up with a Super Bowl ring or an MVP, but it's a story nonetheless. And so I like to know what the narrative is, and to see where God's ways are not our ways, and the world's wisdom is not his wisdom. So that gives me comfort in the midst of when I'm doing my scrolling through social media.
Well, on the positive side, not of social media, but just how things get crafted. I've told you this. So we met 4 years ago. I didn't know you prior to that. Mm-hmm. I was meeting with my uncle out in Texas, who is a pastor of a large church. And this is probably 2 or 3 years ago. And he informed me that it was your dad's consulting that actually gave him some advice. I think it was 20 years ago that and really, if I remember, the advice was, it was, don't try to become this big church that everybody was modeling themselves after. Mm-hmm. Go do what your skill set and what you're called to do. Yep. And if numbers define success, he has a very large church in the Woodlands area, and really it was your dad's advice to him. So
that's really cool. Yeah. As I've gotten older, right, and this is fun because there's a lot of things my dad did that were, you know, a big deal, if you will, when I was younger, before I was even born. And so it's been fun when I get into my 20s and now 30s, I will meet people or hear stories of things that happened 15, 20 years ago, impact that he had. That's just really cool that I never realized. Yeah. You know, it's my dad. And I hear these stories now and it's like, oh, that's really cool and inspiring.
Let's get off of that because I also think it's important. And I'm not saying this just because we're doing this podcast, but you have a very good reputation here in Orlando. In fact, even today, I think James was reiterating some stuff to us and unsolicited. But it's interesting as I think about what you do for Mission Increase, like, this is my read, you're really behind the scenes of a lot of these nonprofits, and these nonprofits are going to go do amazing things. Mm-hmm. And yet, in that regard, your name for most won't be known, but you're playing an unbelievable role in these nonprofits, I'm assuming here in Orlando, maybe outside of Orlando as well. Is that who you are? Are you a behind the scenes guy who really helps lift other people up?
Yeah. I mean, I won't push against that. Thank you. I mean, I'm encouraged by what you just said. I do resonate with that. And I tell you again that even that thread through my own life story is there. Huh. I used to, in many ways, when we would get, because Kirk and I had opportunities when he was in college, especially to speak at some different places and kind of share. We had somewhat of a unique story where when I was a graduated senior in college and Kirk was entering his, I think, third or fourth year, I had an opportunity to kind of help him. Again, didn't have a lot of direction in my own life. Yeah. So that allowed me some freedom and flexibility. So I'm trying to be the optimist. But I ended up living with him, the better part of 2 years and helping him. He had a roommate move out and helped him in just about every aspect because his workload had increased between school, football, media responsibilities, all that. So he had some unique dietary requirements. So I would cook meals, run admin for him, run errands, get up at 5 a.m. to teach a training class, personal training class to kind of make ends meet, take seminary classes at night, and then lead the Michigan State team Bible study.
You
once
do that?
A week. I did. Oh, yeah. Oh, cool. And again, it was just a fun thing that he and I got to do together. But I share that because there's a story in the Bible, David and Jonathan. Mm-hmm. Jonathan's kind of a little known character in the Bible, to your point. Yep. But at one point in the story, Jonathan, who was, you know, by all accounts, his best friend, he comes to David and he says to him specifically, whatever you need me to do for you, I will do it. Huh. And I very much saw that as my role in Kirk's life, kind of what God had put on me at the time. And so it's funny you make the comments you do about Mission Increase. We say at Mission Increase, one of our lines is that we like to see our fruit grow on other people's trees. Huh. I do take that to heart. So it's funny that you say that theme because I look back and I see it and I see it now. And I do take a lot of pride in, I've never necessarily been someone who wants a lot of attention or credit.
Well, it's funny. I hadn't really put it together until as we're talking here, I'm like, wait, I know enough about you. I'm like, wait, there is a theme
That's
here.
Good.
How are you trying to change the world? Whether that be big or whether that be small?
Yeah. Again, great question. I think as I was looking over the notes, some of your questions for this conversation, it was kind of encouraging and inspiring to me just to think about some of these answers because I look back and, you know, we talk about capital.
Yep.
Right. And there's different kinds of capital. And I've listened to some of the episodes of your show. I know who you typically have. And I say, well, financial capital is not something I've had a lot of in my life. And yet I can look back and be super thankful for what I would call relational capital and experiential capital. And a unique life experience between who my dad was, who my brother is, and the exposure that I've had through him. I haven't shared that my mom was a flight attendant. And so my whole life, I've had unique opportunities to travel the world. Mm. She took me on a few trips with her. So she'd be doing like a Paris turnaround. And I'd go to France for 3 days with her and then fly home. Unique opportunities. And then through ministry, did some things with my dad all over the world. When I worked for the Magic, because of that role, I was asked to travel. Last Christmas Day, I was flying up to New York to test a player who might be drafted. I spent a summer living in Croatia.
Wow.
Working with a player. I've had really unique experiences. And what people have affirmed over time is, I think, a unique God-given ability to relate with lots of different kinds of people. Racially, socioeconomically, backgrounds, all of it. I look back now and I see how God kind of crafted my family and how that shaped me to be someone who can connect with, as you said, like on a deeper level.
Yeah.
Lots of different kinds of people. And so I try to, when you say, how are you trying to change the world? That's at least one of the main ones that comes to mind is using the relational and experiential capital I've been given and finding ways to translate that into helping and loving on others.
I know your comment, the way you started this question, was not necessarily meant to be disparaging about yourself, meaning you haven't had capital. But I imagine there's probably a little truth in all of us when we see others that have more capital and are a little bit self-deprecating. But just hearing, I mean, I think part of the reason why we do this podcast is, and so I want to say this out loud, is money is not the only capital. Right. And in fact, I would argue clearly you got to have it and there's wonderful things you can do with it. But I actually think our world puts too much emphasis on that form of capital. So sure. Having somebody like yourself on this discussion, do not think any less of yourself, because I think that's where people are starting to resonate even more of capital is not just their money.
Sure.
It is these other things.
Well, so, you know, I make that comment probably because I'm doing life every day in the space between the givers and the nonprofits. And you're absolutely right. I get to live in this unique space with Mission Increase of leading people, both givers and nonprofit leaders, to live more in a space of what is the spiritual wealth or poverty here? What's the spiritual capital, relational capital, and seeing that, you know, hey, these givers need you just as much as you need them.
Right.
And I think God designed this to be a unifying kind of relationship, not a one-way street.
Yeah. So to that point, and maybe you've already done this, when did you realize the power of capital?
Yes, like I said, slowly over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And what's been cool is how God has used the last 3 years being in the Mission Increase role and more of a unique turn career-wise than ever before. Being married, my wife in so many ways, and then my daughter really solidified a lot of the things we just talked about, just the capital I've been given relationally, experientially, and financially, and stewarding it well.
And this is a hard, this next question is a hard question, because you feel like you got to come up with this grandiose vision. But it's interesting in light of the discussion we just had, because of the family dynamics you're in. So this is all about you, and don't worry about feeling selfish. If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm cheating because you gave me these questions in advance.
Yeah.
So I actually love this question.
All right.
I enjoyed thinking about the answer. And it wasn't a hard answer for me to come up with. I think my greatest dream in some ways ties to my greatest fear, which is not achieving full potential. So if you were to sit in on any conversation with a number of my friends, chiefly my brother, we talk a lot about unmet potential in any arena. So think of like a movie that you go to, or we enjoy golfing, you go to a golf course. A lot of times we'll look through the lens of what could have been done here. And to stick with one analogy, if you play a round of golf and you go somewhere and it was, you know, the course was okay, the manicure was okay, but you go and you have a great experience and you look at it and you say, what they could have done here, what they did a great job. They maxed it out in a sense. And I had it was really cool. And so we'll say like it was a 6 out of 10, but this was never going to be a 9 out of 10. So it met potential. And then there's other times where we'll just grate against an experience where you say, this could have been a 9.
Mm.
And it's a 6.5. And so we'll have some fun conversations like that. But I really do look at my own life that way, in some good ways and probably some unhealthy ways, where I think there is just a fear of, I would hate to get to the end of my life and look back and feel like, okay, God gave me these gifts, these abilities, these experiences, and I didn't realize the full or maximize the potential of them. And in a healthy way, I do think biblically we get an example of this in the parable of the talents, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, as I said with the golf analogy, it's not necessarily that everybody's got to be a 10. He gives these guys different amounts and each of them invest differently, but he says to the ones that invested obediently and stewarded, right, to use that word, he says to all three of them the same answer. Or the ones that invested wisely, he says the same answer to all of them. Well done, good and faithful servant. As I've gotten older, I think I'm realizing that the answer to that question or that dream is maybe simpler, not easier, but simpler than I've realized.
And do you know what areas specifically that you go, these are areas that I want to maximize? Do you know what those are for you?
Yeah. Well, good question. I think I'm figuring it out.
Okay.
And I don't think it's any more complicated than saying faith, family, and vocation.
Okay.
The things we talked about today, gifts, abilities, and just saying, all right, Lord, am I stewarding the relationships, the family you've given me? Again, sort of a wide range. I feel like I'm good at a lot of things and have never been great at one thing. And that sort of contributed to that dream being a little overwhelming. Like, well, I can sort of sing and dance. How do I use that to glorify you? Even in if it's in a simple kind of side way. And then in my work, just how am I maximizing the creativity or the ways you've enabled me to think, the leadership skills, the teaching skills. And by His grace, Mission Increases, I think, allowing me to do that more than ever. So I, like I said, I'm learning to trust Him that it is simpler and that it really is just taking the next step, one step at a time. And that would be the dream, is just to fulfill potential using the gifts I've been given well in those different arenas.
So you have the unique ability to see all these different ministries, nonprofit organizations, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming in several different capacities you work with them, but let's just say on the capital side, is there any takeaways that you would share with our listeners as to what you've learned from working with nonprofits over the last 3 years?
Oh man, that's a loaded question.
I'm sure there's a lot in there, but
yeah. No, I think just that there are so many stereotypes in the space, really in both directions, right? And I've talked with givers who are very honest with me and say, there's so many of us out there that we are not truly generous. There are ways that we could be way more radically generous with what we've been given.
Okay.
We're kind of trying to live in both worlds, and the nonprofit stereotypes, unfortunately, in ways are true. Or, you know, you've got a leader who's really passionate and gifted at the work of the ministry or the work that they're doing on the front lines, and not as skilled at the business side, the strategic planning, the organizing. But you have so many more leaders that are, I think, than we realize. Leaders that are gifted at that and are really well organized and have great vision. And so I do get to live in this, you know, if I'm being honest, there's weeks where it's frustrating and it feels overwhelming. And how are we going to ever get these two groups to come together? Again, talk about unmet potential, where I think we all look at it and say, there's a ton of potential here.
Yeah.
We're not there yet, but there's a ton of potential. So weeks that are overwhelming, frustrating, but a lot of other weeks, I'd say most days, where I wake up really inspired by what could be.
Yeah.
And trying to, again, steward my position with Mission Increase to say, how do we platform as many organizations? First of all, how do I help them develop the skills and put the tools in place necessary to succeed? But then how do we platform them with givers, right? And then people like you and NCF and Generous Giving are doing a great job on the giver side, getting them to a good place. But how do we platform ourselves to connect the two groups in such a way that, yes, I think God wants to see impact and the needle move. That's what we're probably chiefly concerned with. But the relationship, the spiritual growth of both camps is, I would say, just as big of a deal to Him. And I think Scripture backs that up.
I want to commend you for what you're doing from a career perspective.
Thank you.
And like I said, I hear wonderful things about what you're doing. And if you ever get discouraged that you're not personally having as much impact, you just need to go talk to some of the people that I'm talking to, because you're making a big difference in their lives. And
if you could just keep a list and send it to me, that would be really helpful. I have a high school teacher of mine encouraged me to keep an NT folder in my inbox, which stands for nice things.
Yeah.
And so when I get encouraging emails, they get dragged into the NT folder, so that, you know, anytime you go back and you need that encouragement, you can read through those.
Well, what's interesting is, on one hand, the nonprofit world or ministry world, you think is you should always feel good. You know, you're just serving others. Uh-huh. But the truth is it can be a lonely, hard road.
That's at the core of what we do at Mission Increase. I mean, that's why we're here. To be honest, is that you look at givers who are frustrated in their giving, and they feel, historically, a lot of givers in the fundraising conversation feel used.
Yep.
Right. And then on the nonprofit side, leaders, they don't like fundraising because they don't like asking for money. Right. And there's some broken concepts there, and they don't have joy. As I say to a lot of my leaders who are asking kind of, well, what is Mission Increase? Why would I join? And I say, we look at a situation where you have done fundraising because you have to.
Mm-hmm.
it's I joke, it's sort of the unholy means to a holy end.
Yeah.
Right. And so we in many ways exist to change that paradigm.
Yeah.
And to say, I don't believe that in God's economy, he desires, yes, there's challenge in life, there's even suffering, but I don't believe that he designed your work and fundraising to just be a means to an end. I genuinely believe he designed it to be a meaningful thing and a ministry in and of itself. Yeah. To your givers. And so I try to encourage leaders to live in that space. And I have gotten to see it many, many times. Yeah. Where they enjoy their work. They enjoy not just what they do, but the fundraising piece.
Obviously we're talking charity here, but also my world, which is the impact investing side, which frankly, the two worlds are starting to come together more and more.
Yeah, which is exciting.
It is exciting, but I have to remind myself, because we're forging new stuff. We're thinking about capital differently. What I have to keep going back to is whether it's charitable capital or whether it's investment capital, when people put capital into an investment or when people put capital into a nonprofit, there is a connection that is then created. Mm-hmm. And what an amazing journey that can be for the giver or the investor. And so not that I talk to CEOs of nonprofits, but you almost want to say it's really a privilege for these donors to come alongside of you and what you're doing. So don't always think about it just asking for capital. If done well, you're going to bring them along on this journey and they're going to get so much from it versus, oh man, I got to go ask for money.
Correct. And that, to the degree that fundraising is in and of itself a ministry, it's leadership. To the degree that leaders, you know, on the ministry side continue to believe or live into that paradigm that fundraising is a means to an end, or it's this thing I have to do so that I can go do what I want to do. As you live into that, you're only going to perpetuate the problem on the giver side, because they're only going to continue to feel used and continue, because that's what you're communicating to them. So if you can approach them, if you actually can first own yourself and believe that this is good for them and what we're doing here together, by the way, like Ephesians 4, when Paul says, like, we gave these gifts to equip the saints for the work of service, it doesn't then follow the next verse saying for the greatest amount of impact. It says for the purpose of the unity of the body. Mm. That's an important piece to keep in mind. Not that Jesus wasn't about impact, he was, but it's that we in some ways are doing this together and kind of putting him on display with what this is supposed to look like. So there's more to it than just achieving the stated objective.
Which is interesting, because most people in the financial impact space, and there's nothing wrong with this, and half of why I do it is because of this, it's solving big problems.
Yep.
But often what you don't hear in my world, which is really where I'm called to, is connecting the investor with this capital, because it's helping them going from fear and greed to actually joy and freedom.
Right. And don't get me wrong, it's both. It's very much both. So lest anyone hear this, listen and say like, oh, you're just about the relational and the kind of, no, it's Jesus was about both. God is about big numbers. I believe that. It's just sometimes we lose sight of the rest at the expense, or we look at the numbers at the expense of the rest.
Well, and which is interesting in the impact investing world, it's all about generally the impact. It's all about where the capital is going and how it's impacting others. And it's less about how it actually can change an investor's heart. So anyways, well, look, very much appreciate you coming in here. Your beard looks phenomenal. let's see how long, what it looks like in 2 months when you could try to compete with James.
Can't compete with James. Yeah, he's on another level.
Don't forget to subscribe to New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.